Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the Becoming Podcast from New Life Church. We're so excited to share in this conversation with you today as we explore what it means to become more people, more like Jesus. Happy listening.
Well, welcome to the Becoming Podcast, where it's great to have you back with us again. We've got a conversation today with two of my own personal heroes. And before we get that, if it's your first time on the Becoming Podcast, I just wanted to let you know that this whole podcast is about asking this question: who are we becoming? Who are you becoming? And we're passionate about the answer to that, hopefully being we want to be more like Jesus. And this whole podcast wants to resource you in your journey and your discipleship. And to do that today, we have two special guests, Jess.
I'm really excited, Michael, because we've got Nikki and Scylla Lee, who are the creators and founders of Alpha Marriage.
Yes, definitely.
And I think through any season, whether you're single, taken, married, divorced, like I think marriage and relationships constantly is a hot topic.
Yeah. And not many people know this, but actually Nikki and Scylla Lee were key people in leading Nikki and Pippa Gumbel to come know Jesus, who were the who really championed Alpha as well. Yes. So without their friendship, we don't know if Nikki and Pippa would have come to know the Lord the way that they did either, which
is
amazing.
That is so true.
What are you
that
excited so about today's conversation?
I think when, you know, living in this society at the moment, divorce is so high in marriage and relationships. I think the divorce rate is 50%, and it's been like that for a really long time. And I think marriage and the whole concept of marriage has lost its value, has lost its worth. You know, me, myself, before I came to faith, I didn't see the value of marriage. I didn't even necessarily want to get married.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people that are struggling to see, you know, the idea and the concept of why we should get married. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to them shedding light in that. And yeah, how about yourself?
I've met Nikki and Scylla Lee once, and just the wisdom they have because they've done the hard yards.
Yeah.
And so they've not only raised children, they've been married for a long time. And anyone that's been married that long has not been married that long because it's been easy. It's because they've chosen to do hard things.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot of wisdom to offer. So we hope and pray, friends, that it's a blessing to you. So here's Nikki and Scylla Lee on what it means to be married. Well, we are so excited today to be joined by Nikki and Scylla Lee from Alpha Marriage. And you guys have just landed in Australia 2 days ago.
We have, yeah.
Well, welcome to Australia. Thank How are you enjoying the country so far?
Oh, it's wonderful to be here in Brisbane in the blue sky and warm weather. Oh, it's fabulous.
And a very warm welcome. We've just met such lovely people since we've been here.
Well, your reputation precedes you. You guys have been doing so much for marriages all around the world, more than what you probably know or achieve. So we'd say thank you to you, first of all.
That's so kind.
My wife and I have been married 11 years, and we've done the marriage course, and we're massive fans of it. It was a big shifter for us. So it's brilliant. What are you thinking of Australia so far? Are you coping with the heat okay?
It's just a delight. It's an absolute delight, and that people are so enthusiastic, and we've met, I mean, we've only been here 2 days, but we just get so excited when we meet wonderful people. We hear wonderful stories of people coming to faith, of marriages being transformed. We were on a radio program yesterday morning. Wow. And I mean, the guy who was interviewing us was just fabulous. And then he had callers ring in. And the first call was from a woman called Kirsty. I mean, she was on radio, so I don't think she minds us saying her name. And she just told us this beautiful story of how, I mean, she, in her words, said, going on the marriage course saved my life and transformed our marriage. Mm. And she'd had a lot of trauma with the birth of her first child. Then they really, to sort of try and cope with all the fallout from that, they heard about the marriage course and went on it. Wow. But during that time, they lost a second child.
Oh my gosh.
And she said, we would honestly, it was only because of what we had learned, the tools and the skills to communicate with each other, that we managed to hang in there. Mm. And she said, that was how many years ago?
That was 13
years ago.
Wow. They've been married 15 years. And then the guy who was interviewing us, talking to Kirsty, online, said, and, you know, have you done other things to follow up since then? And Gussie just said, I just tell everybody to do the marriage course. Find a marriage course, go and do it.
And it was lovely. She was from Brisbane and she just said, it's wonderful. There are churches running the marriage course all around my area.
I send my friends.
So we thought, wow, how exciting.
So it was very encouraging.
No, you would be encouraged. You would be. And I mean, we, you know, Becoming Podcast is the name of what we're doing here. Mm. It's focused on people who are new to faith and who may never have heard of the marriage course before. So when we're talking about the Alpha Marriage Course, what are we talking about? What is the Alpha Marriage Course? And in a moment, I'm going to get you to share your story as well about how you two met.
Well, in summary, there are actually two courses. Mm. There's the pre-marriage course, and that's for couples who are either engaged or who want to explore getting married. Mm. And today, there are a lot more couples who are cautious of marriage, maybe because they've had a painful experience in their past, maybe because their parents' marriage or relationship broke up. And we want to give couples the opportunity to really see what marriage is about and how actually the commitment of marriage, rather than tying us down, can be liberating because it helps to build trust between us. It enables openness and vulnerability, and that builds real close intimacy. So that's one course, and then the other one?
Well, we'd been running the pre-marriage course for a number of years, and what we started to realize was these couples who come on the pre-marriage course, they're in love, they're infatuated, they're wearing those rose-tinted specs, and they think everything's just going to be rosy. And then what they realize is actually there's things one has to kind of work through, and there's, you know, a whole journey ahead, and they need those tools. And so we thought we need to develop a course that we can get them back within 2 or 3 years and they can do a refresher. And so that's why we developed the 7 sessions of the marriage course. And really, it's just been amazing because we thought it was just for couples in the first 5 years of marriage. But actually, after the first course, we realized there were couples coming who'd been married longer, 10, 20 years more. And the feedback we got from all of the couples coming, and they were in very different situations, some with great marriages, investing, others struggling, others just sort of cruising and not really feeling connected. And we heard the same feedback that actually they benefited, that this opportunity on the marriage course to take 7 evenings together to invest in their relationship had really changed things. And can I just say about the marriage course and the pre-marriage course, probably the central part of the courses is during each session, there is time for the couple to talk privately together as a couple around the different topics. And we know those are the transformational times on the courses.
And we also know that probably 95% of the couples who come wouldn't come if there was a group discussion. So they're absolutely assured you're just going to have this privacy to have and important conversations.
Maybe things unmoderated in many ways as well, right?
Yes, totally.
And maybe things they haven't talked about before, ever. Or maybe things that they didn't know they needed to talk about. And this gives them an opportunity, a sort of safe environment to start to talk about these topics and discover what each other feels. Couples again and again say, I learned more about my partner and more about myself as a result of the course.
What I love about the Marriage Alpha course, you started because you saw a need in your local community, overflowing from your life. It's now gone global around the world. I mean, I don't know what it must be like to rock up in a nation where you have churches that you've never met the pastors or people of seeing your faces. I've done the marriage course, the way you adoringly look at each other and lovingly look at each other. But it begins with a story. It begins with your story. It begins with how you guys met. And I think, I mean, I've heard it, but I think our listeners would be really blessed by how did you guys come to be married and into a space where you thought, oh, we want to put into other marriages as well. How did you two meet?
Well, we met when we were teenagers. I was 18, Scylla was just 17, and we were going on holiday to the same place in the southwest of Ireland. We met in a queue for a car ferry. I was sitting in my car and I watched this girl trying to peel a sticker off the car in front of mine. I was absolutely I was just gripped. And then a friend came up and said, I want to introduce you to my friend Scylla.
Wow.
When I met her. And it really was. It was love at first sight. We both fell for each other. Although neither of us told the other. It took us 2 weeks before we discovered the feelings were mutual.
Okay, but anyway.
And were you Christians at the time?
No, we were not. Okay. We were not. But yeah. we did start going out right away. And that, I mean, you know, we were just like, I felt I want to be with this guy for the rest of my life. And I thought the world's my oyster. I know how to do life. I've got a great guy. And off we went. And then just when we started university, there was a mission at university and an amazing guy came to speak. And Nikki had kind of over a number of weeks been exploring the Christian faith, talking to somebody, and he took him to hear some talks. And then we came together, and over a weekend, really, I heard for the first time about the Christian faith. Wow. And actually, we both, on the final night of this week-long series of talks, we both came to faith. And so that changed
it,
a lot.
It took me about four and a half months to get there. Took Scylla 24 hours.
Wow.
That's pretty typical. That tells you something about us.
That's your personality types right there.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Scylla gets there quicker than I do. So the fact I was exploring Christianity, I kept very much away from her because I didn't want her to jump to any conclusions.
Yeah.
I wanted to have time to make up my own mind.
And obviously, once we had come to faith, I mean, there were big implications in kind of learning about how to follow Jesus and what that meant for our relationship. And that for the next 2.5 years, we learned a lot about God's ways of loving, and which was slightly different from our ways. But so good,
yeah.
so good. Instead of being actually really quite intensely just focused on each other and quite inward looking, quite exclusive, quite, I don't know, we just, I'd say in one of the things we learned was the difference between lusting after one another and loving one another.
Yeah.
And that was a very big change.
What is the difference?
What is the difference?
Yeah.
The difference is, I think part of lust is just a sense of wanting self-gratification, obviously through the sexual relationship, but actually it becomes a kind of mindset. I'm wanting something from you to fulfill me.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And
loving is the other way around.
Yeah.
Is giving of ourselves to the other person for what is best for them.
Yeah.
I remember reading Pope John Paul II, last Pope but one, wrote a lot about marriage and relationships and family life, because he knew this was so important for our society today.
Yeah.
And I remember reading this line where he said, the opposite of loving someone. I thought I knew what he was going to say, the rest of the sentence. I thought he was going to say hating them, but it wasn't. He said, the opposite of loving someone is using them.
Wow.
And that really struck me.
Mm.
And then he goes on to describe marriage as this, he describes it as the total donation of self. And he says, this is the most intimate of human relationships, but it's about this mutual giving to each other. And then from there, he starts to unpack it. And he talks about how the marriage relationship is a reflection of God's relationship with us.
Mm.
Jesus gives himself, just as he said at the Last Supper, this is my body given for you.
Yeah.
So in marriage, we give ourselves to each other.
Yeah.
And in doing that, insofar as we love each other, giving ourselves to each other, we become a picture of God's love for us and for the world.
Yeah.
And I remember when I read that, I thought, gosh, marriage is much more than just our love, isn't
yeah,
it? It's much bigger.
Yeah.
It has a much bigger God-given purpose than we'd realized, or than most people actually realize today.
Yeah. So what do you think the narrative is that the world tells us about marriage? Because one of the questions I'd even have building on the back of that is, can you be married and use the person you're married to rather than love the person you're married to? Which I think you'd probably both say yes.
Yeah.
And so what are the key markers between a marriage which is Christ-centered and maybe a marriage that doesn't have Christ in it? What would you see? Any clear distinctions between those two understandings?
Well, first of all, I think you'd have to say there are no perfect marriages.
Right. Yeah.
So it is in terms of what we seek, what we're seeking to do. And I think Jesus both inspires us by example. So as he's loved us, giving himself for us, so we are to love each other. But he also inspires us by his Spirit living within us. So giving us those, that inward desire, that strength in order to be able to love each other.
Yeah, great. I think that's beautiful. One of the key challenges I think in our day and age is the challenge around sex.
Yeah.
And where sex sits in marriage. I young adults in my church always talking to me about, but why? Why sex for marriage?
For marriage.
You know, we love each other. Why can't we just take a step? I mean, you guys were probably engaging in some of these things before you were Christians, right?
Totally.
So talk to us a little bit about, as much as you want to, but I've heard you talk about it on the video already, so I feel very aware of where you're going to go. But how does a Christian understanding of sex enrich sex, not rob us of sex in so many ways? And maybe even share some of your own story.
Well, I think, I mean, personally, we've experienced that the design that God has for sex to be within the context of the commitment of a marriage relationship and the vows that we make to love one another, be faithful to one another, to serve one another for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And that is where this most intimate act and the most private thing that one could ever, ever give to another person is intended to be nurtured.
Yeah.
And we cheapen love every time we give that gift away to another person. Now, I know many people, and I felt this. I thought, well, I'm not promiscuous. I'm not sleeping around. I just love this guy. Why can't I express my love by having sex and sleeping together? That's my expression of loving him. But in retrospect now, and we really learned this when we came to follow Jesus, that actually we're so vulnerable when we're outside of God's plans and God's design for us as fallible human beings. And even though we both desired to get married, we didn't know at that stage whether we were, ultimately. And to give this most precious part of ourselves to another person before we'd made those vows is always a big risk of it may not turn out that we get married.
Yeah.
And then you have given that to someone. And then when you do get married to someone, it's like, well, I should have kept this for you to actually show this is the ultimate giving of self, the giving of yourself to another person. So we learned the hard way, and when we came to faith, we both knew. No one told us. Nobody said, stop it, or anything like that.
Yeah,
it was totally the work of the Spirit in our heart saying, actually, there's a better way, and I want to show you the better way. And we learn in the it was about 2.5 years before we then did get married. And we learned such a lot that was exactly what Nikki was describing, this totally looking out and looking, how can I meet your need? How can I? But without the sex. And that had, you have to get very, very kind of creative and really saying, okay, so what does loving really mean?
I would imagine, especially having to take a step back.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be creative even before the sex,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then having to have taken a step back from that would have been even more difficult.
And it took, you know, it was lessons in self-control. And again, just like we were saying, that's a, you know, the Paul talks about it as a fruit of the Spirit, self-control. You realize actually in marriage, you need self-control, because we can get attracted to a whole load of people potentially when we're married.
Yeah.
But actually saying, no, we're going to keep directing those sexual attraction, those desires towards each other. And then the sex in marriage becomes a really precious, important part of strengthening our connection together, our intimacy. And we say this on the marriage course, You know, every other part of our marriage, the emotional connection we create with each other through our communication, through
having
the time
fun
we spend together, having fun, enhances our sexual relationship, but our sexual relationship then enhances every other part of our marriage. The two, it's not like sex is just the icing on the cake of a marriage. Sex is an ingredient of the cake itself.
But what is crazy in our culture today, we know so many married couples, I mean, whether Christians or not Christians, who they get married and then basically they stop having sex, you know, and the world and Christians who whether, you know, are trying to not have sex before they get married, they can't believe it. They think, what is going on? This is a topsy-turvy world. And that, I think, just says it all. And we have to really, and we do on the marriage course, say, no, this is very precious. This is a beautiful part of building closeness, connection, intimacy, and don't let it just die out. You must nurture it like every other part of your relationship. And but it needs to be seen in the context of how precious it is. It's not. Yeah. It's just not a commodity to be sort of cheapened.
Yeah. Speaking about that, speaking about the way that we see marriage and the health of those marriages, divorce rates are pretty high at the moment. In your work with couples, do you see a commonality around why divorce is on such a rise? I know the British culture may be very different from Australian
it's the
culture.
Same.
I don't think it is that different, actually, from what we've heard, what we've observed, the stories that we've heard. And I think there are a number of factors in our culture today. And one of them is the pressure of time. And we live busier lives, there's no question. The means of communication we have means that we can be communicating to more and more people, faster and faster speed. But the danger is that stops us communicating with the person who's closest to us, our husband or wife, and those others who are closest. So, that is a huge pressure. Just this little device of mobile phone, which is so useful, such benefit, such a brilliant device, and yet it can stop this connection between us. That's a huge factor.
I think actually, I mean, the statistics are quite complicated, but one thing I would really want to say is many people think that I'm afraid of commitment, so I will live with someone and find out if this is going to be okay. But actually, all the statistics show that cohabiting relationships are way more vulnerable and fragile than marriage relationships.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's totally because of this, the commitment, the vows we make once we actually decide. Because the thing is, very often couples will slide into living together. Suddenly, you know, you're in two different flats and you're both paying rent. And then you think, oh, well, it would be much cheaper if we just moved in together and then we're only paying one rent. And so it goes on. And then you kind of think, oh, well, we'll have a mobile account together. Then we'll get a dog. And then we'll, but you're not making a decision about your relationship, really.
No.
You are just sliding into being together.
Yeah.
And when you make a decision to actually commit to marry and get married, that is a very internally powerful decision.
Oh, gosh,
and then you have this context of the commitment of the vows in which you have, as we've described, this trust is able to build with an openness because you're not about to just walk out the door. And so cohabiting relationships are much more fragile and breaking down at a faster and faster rate than marriages. So actually, in the UK, where you state the stats, that, I mean, the divorce stats haven't changed dramatically.
They've increased a bit, but not dramatically.
It's more the breakdown of cohabiting.
And it's people not getting married.
Yeah.
I think it was over 30 years between 1991 and 2021. I think the marriage rate, i.e. the number of people getting married per thousand of the population, halved.
Wow.
And which is simply because of what Scylla was describing, people choosing to cohabit instead of getting married.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But, and then often having children as well within these relationships, but then these relationships breaking down much faster. And of course, the more it becomes a vicious circle. So the more people, well, let's say children growing up without their parents together, or they've seen the painful separation of their parents' relationship, then they're more cautious themselves. So the next generation. So it's seeking to reverse that, seeking to help people to see that actually marriage is a beautiful thing. The commitment within marriage is a powerful, liberating thing, not a restricting thing.
And actually, as the church, we have such a great opportunity on two levels. A, to inform people in a sense of that truth, that marriage is actually good, not a scary thing or a frightening thing or something that ties you down or something that reduces your freedom to be who you are, because we don't lose who we are when we become married.
No,
I mean,
that's right.
People who are married talk about my other half. I mean, that is such a untruth. You do not become half a person when you get married.
Yeah.
You are fully you.
Yeah.
And Nikki is fully him.
Yeah.
And we come together and we build a partnership together.
Right.
But we are individually made by God, unique and loved as an individual. Our identity is in him.
Amen.
But what was I talking about then?
Can I just say, I think the other big issue today is that there, and I know this has been around for quite a long time, the sort of Hollywood myth about marriage and love, and that, you know, if you happen to marry the right person, if you meet the one and marry them, then all will be well. But if you marry and it doesn't seem to be going so well, then people think, oh, I haven't married the right person.
Yeah.
I need to ditch them and go on looking for the one. And this is a myth. It's not the one. It's actually, there are things we can do to make a relationship work. And then when people realize that it's not a question of luck, it's not just a question of whether you met the right person, actually, there are things we can do for our communication, for resolving conflict, for making our relationship work and to get better and to last. That sets them free.
Yeah.
Because they're not at the mercy of some form of sort of fate.
Yeah.
I've remembered what I was going to say. Well, the opportunity for the church is to be very practical and to offer practical support and encouragement for relationships.
Yeah.
And I mean, actually, we need to do it at every stage of life, you know, for young people,
young families,
relationship help, support, education, and single people and married people and people preparing to get married and so on. And that's why we feel passionate that the church has such a great opportunity, because people everywhere are looking for help with relationships. And, you know, it's hard to find help.
And on that, the Bible talks about marriage in a very different way than we hear about in the world. It talks about love your wife like Christ loved the church, serve your husband. What is the importance of how you guys understand covenant and the way that covenant plays out in marriage? And indeed, how does marriage reflect, and why should it reflect God's relationship with us?
Of course, that passage that you've quoted where Paul is talking about what marriage is, that was radical teaching. Because in the Roman world, in the Roman Empire, the husband, the father had total control, total rights over his family, his wife, his children, his slaves. He could do what he liked. And Paul switches it around and he says, no, submit to each other.
Yeah.
And submitting to each other essentially means serving each other, serving each other's needs, looking out for each other.
Yeah.
And this becomes a covenant of love where we are, the covenant we make is to love and support and to serve each other.
Yeah.
And that and particularly because the church met in homes.
Yeah.
and where it was a household. Yeah. You know, not just a nuclear family like we think of it today. A household was a whole household, maybe three generations with servants, with slaves, and so on. Yeah. But right at the heart of this was this marriage relationship, which, as you said, where the husband, he had a, it was very different to the sort of what was around in the world. And when that started to happen, when the husband was loving his wife as Christ loved him, and loved the church, that changed, and people saw the beauty of this relationship.
And the church met in houses, met in these households. And so what was being seen and modeled, and that what Paul was instructing, was unbelievably countercultural. Yes. And people give Paul a very hard time, and they say he's anti-women and all that. He wasn't. He was completely for women and for a totally new social structure where marriage was an equal partnership, where absolutely this serving and respecting one another and giving of oneself was absolutely at the heart. And the church is where that first started.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've lost our way many times, but I think we have to get back to that covenant relationship.
And you're right in understanding that it's a covenant, not a contract. A contract is where we each have things that we do
to fulfill the kind of...
Yeah, it's give and take all the time. A covenant is different. The covenant is based on a promise, on a promise to love. And in that... that reflects the covenant of love that God makes with us.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I think for me, I don't know if you know the works of Tim Keller.
Yes.
But Tim Keller said this line that changed my perspective of marriage. He said, you can never marry the right person. You can never marry the wrong person. You marry someone and what you do next makes them the right person.
Mm. Yes.
I think you can marry people that are more helpful
and
less helpful. You guys seem to have really landed the plane well on that one.
Oh, we have our differences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But that's a beautiful and the right way to look at it. That's very helpful.
Because we spend most of our lives looking for our one.
Yeah.
Just our one. And another guy, Lou Giglio, said it like this. He said, you've found your one.
Mm.
Your one is God. Your one is Jesus.
Yes.
You're not looking for your one.
No.
You're looking for someone that's going to help you pursue your one.
Yes.
Help
you
pursue the one of your heart.
Yes.
Keller also has this great line where he says in his book, Meaning of Marriage, he says, one day, real love, real marriage is where you'll stand before the throne of God and you'll look to the person next to you and you'll see them in their full glory and you'll say, I always knew.
Yeah.
Always knew you could look like this.
Yeah.
I saw a glimpse of it on earth. I got to journey with you to see you become
lovely.
This. And there's this image of marriage, which is about more than just romance.
Yeah.
Although romance is so important. It's about more than just sex, although sex is such an important ingredient.
Yes.
It's this selfless giving to who this other person has become.
And I think, you know, in a Christian marriage with Jesus at the center, the ripples go out and out and out.
Yeah.
And I think we have to help couples understand that they and what their lives reflect is an incredibly powerful and beautiful thing. And we know countless stories of people who've come from very chaotic, very dysfunctional backgrounds, who've had painful experiences, and they are around a church community of single people and married people, and they learn about what the love of God is through real human relationships of marriage and of friendship. And that is very, very powerful. And we want to kind of help couples to see that actually they have such an amazing opportunity that these wonderful ripples keep going out and out. So every time anybody comes into a Christian home and sees a Christian marriage, they are impacted, absolutely beautifully impacted. And that's a very good reason to be leading lives of fully authentic and integrated. So we are, you know, and particularly for those in church leadership to be leading lives absolutely the same in our homes, in our marriages, with our families, and in our, you know, those relationships as we do in a wider context.
And that was what was modeled to us, actually.
Yeah.
Really all the way through our Christian journey, but right at the start, it was seeing Christian marriages and Christian families And we thought, that's what we want.
Wow.
And we learned from them. We learned from those who are ahead of us and older, and we continue to do so.
Yeah. Interesting question for each of you personally. You guys teach one of the world's most famous marriage courses.
Well,
first question, do you still get it wrong? And secondly,
still it does from time to time, Michael.
Do you have a proclivity? Is there something in you you're like, you know, the one part of our marriage teaching I struggle with the most? Do you have something that you have to continue to remind yourself of? Like, what would be an example?
Well, you go first. I'll
and if she gets it wrong, you let Scylla know what the answer is.
I mean, how long have you got?
Yeah,
I have a long list. Okay, probably my biggest flaw is I am not a naturally good listener. And I have had to...
I'm not mmming there because I've experienced that at all. No, I think you're a great conversationalist, Scylla. Yeah, yeah.
And I really recognize the power of listening and what an amazing gift it is in a close relationship. And it's not just in a marriage relationship, though obviously that is the most important one because you're so up close and personal, but a parent, child, or friends, or even colleagues, all of it. Listening is something that's so key. Wow. And I am not naturally good at it. Yeah. I have to really intentionally, I've had to learn to be an effective and a good listener.
Yeah.
And when I get heated, when I'm kind of, you know, Nikki's deciding he thinks we should do something one way, and I'm saying, you must be crazy. I'm just off on my agenda, my way of thinking. I've got to be right. And instead of asking him, okay, tell me a bit more about what you're thinking. Yeah. And if I can stop and listen, oh my goodness, we save so much conflict.
And I think for me, I'm an internal processor and I like to keep things peaceful and calm and happy. So if I'm upset, if someone's hurt me, and she's often had no idea that she said or done something to upset me, I can sort of stew on it and think about it. And I have to keep remembering it's better to talk about it, to bring it out. I try to use the right moment. But that is a constant reminder. That's not rather than burying, actually to be able to talk about. And it's so, if I'm worried about something, it's so much better when I've shared it with Scylla. Or if she's hurt me, it's so much better when she then knows and she can say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to try not to do that again. And then it's all done. It's all sort of dusted and forgiven. But I don't do that naturally. I have to keep remembering and reminding myself.
But I think that's the most encouraging thing we've learned over a lifetime of being married is we can always change. Yeah. We can't change our partner, but we can really change ourselves and with God's help. And there are many times, I mean, for example, when we have four kids and I absolutely thrived and loved parenting them when they were kind of under 10. It just came naturally to me. I loved it and it was great. I really wasn't naturally good with teenagers. And boy, I started to have a very bumpy journey with our kids as they became teenagers. And I found it very challenging. Nikki is a natural with teenagers. I really had to change my way of parenting. I had to go on a big learning curve. I really needed his support. And, you know, that kind of change is possible. We can learn and become self-aware, and really we can learn new ways of doing things. So I would want to say to anybody who's thinking, no, we're incompatible, we're just too different, we're just like, it doesn't work, it can work.
Yeah.
But we just need to have the tools and we need to actually ask God for help
to
change. To probably it's about pride. We think we're right. And actually, we're not necessarily right, and we can do it a different way. We just need to learn a different way.
Yeah, I think it's so encouraging. I mean, I don't think people talk about their failures in marriage enough.
No.
And we have this veneer, don't we,
where
we're holding everything together, and you have these married couples coming through going, and even young people, single people coming through going, they just make it look so easy.
I know.
But
can I tell you a little story, Michael?
No, please.
We were in London. There's the Underground. We call it the Tube.
Yeah.
And we were going from our home when we lived in central London, about, I don't know, six stops, seven stops. And I cannot to this day remember what the issue was, but Scylla and I were having, Scylla was really upset with me. And as we said, she was telling me quite loudly, very passionately, how upset she was.
That doesn't strike me as true, Nikki. I've not seen that characteristic yet.
Just spend a little bit longer around us. You'll see it. Won't take too long. And anyway, there were other people in the carriage, not very many, but there was somebody who was standing not very far from us. And he was getting out before we did. But just before he got out, he paused and he said, looked at us and said, "You're Nikki and Scylla Lee, aren't you? I'm doing the marriage course with my wife at, you know, another part of London." And we thought, oh no, he's heard the whole thing.
And then he got off the tube. We didn't have a time to sort of say, oh, well, you know, like this.
Anyway, after that, I said, if we're having a disagreement in public, keep a smile on your face and keep talking in a low tone.
We are the brand. We are the brand. Yeah. That's great. Oh, I think that's brilliant. Nicky Gumbel had a similar story about once when he was riding
on
his bike.
And the taxi driver.
And he started to, like, you know, harass this guy. Yeah. Go around and he's like, "Hey, Nikki, I'm doing Alpha."
Yeah.
Which brilliant. Is so great. But there's a beauty to that too, isn't it? Yeah. Because I think Christians, we ourselves, we're stumbling our way home. We're not perfecting in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And why do you think married couples find it so difficult to ask for help?
Oh, gosh.
You know, like in my experience, there's almost this, people come and talk to you, but it's like, oh, but we don't want to. Yeah. We don't want to do the marriage alpha course because we're fine. And it's honestly getting over that hump.
It's just a mindset.
Isn't it?
It is totally a mindset. And it's in both, I'd say, the Christian community and in the wider community. There's a stigma around doing anything for your relationship or sort of showing vulnerability and so on. And actually, I think we just have to turn that on its head. I mean, we always give this example of in the UK when the government brought in the seatbelt law. And it was exactly when we were starting to drive.
Yeah.
And which is a lifetime away before you were ever born.
The last century, ancient history.
And we thought it was so uncool to wear a seatbelt. Yeah. We just didn't wear seatbelts. And then, you know, the government kind of put in fines and it wasn't really working and people were still not wearing them. They realized they had to do a serious, serious campaign to change the culture around seatbelts. And they did. I mean, they did a serious, it was, oh gosh, and they were scary. You know how crashes and all the rest. And now, I mean, anybody who's normal just puts on a seatbelt. We put our kids in seatbelts. It saves lives. It's the norm. It's what we do.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do with marriage.
Yeah, it's so
and
true.
Saying relationships need investing. They need support. They need help. We all do. Leaders do. Everybody. It's not a question of, oh, we've reached this level, ticked a box, we're all fine.
Yeah.
It's not about that. It's an ongoing mindset change.
And that took some time at our church in London, at HTB, where to become normal for every couple to do the marriage course. And actually, one of the great benefits of the course is nobody says why they've come. Nobody has to say what state their marriage is in.
Mm.
So people could be really struggling, hanging by a thread, and they can come and do the course, they have these private conversations, and so often that can start to turn things around for them. And then they might choose to tell us their story. Sometimes they do, and that's lovely.
Yeah.
But the culture, as Scylla says, getting that shift so that it's a normal thing to invest in your relationship is a good thing to do. And we sometimes compare it to going to a gym. You know, people go to a gym. Do you call them gyms here to get healthy?
Yes, we call them gyms, yeah.
Stay in shape.
We usually know it's a car service.
Oh, yeah. You know,
car service,
yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean something's wrong, but it's just helpful to go in to make sure there's nothing under the
hood.
And, you know, I don't know if there's a couple who would come and do the marriage course where they wouldn't get something out of it. And for Scylla and myself, every time we've run the course, we get reminded of something.
Wasn't it? That was brilliant.
And we have another, we talk about something else that we felt. And so we never get to the end of learning about each other, of working at our relationship. Mm. And getting closer, it has so many rewards.
So you guys have been married for how many years now?
47.
47. Wow. What are you doing for your, what are you doing for your 50th?
Oh, gosh. We haven't thought about that.
Oh, sorry. Bloody
how
day,
have you not Michael? Thought about it?
No.
Come back to Australia. We'll show you a good time. But you're a descendant of marriage in terms of, you know, so let's pray for another 50 years.
Yeah. Right? Oh, wow.
But thinking about people down the other end, they're not yet married. Do you think much, have you ever counseled people through one of, I think, the biggest misnomers in the church, the dating relationship?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How do you what advice do you give to young Christians approaching dating or courting or whatever nomer? Because it's this gray zone for the Christian world.
I think one of the big things in our experience is helping people to take risks.
Mm.
And I don't know whether we're more risk averse.
I think this younger generation is risk averse.
But it certainly plays into what we've been talking about, the understanding of, you know, marriages, you find the one.
Yeah,
whereas actually, it is about going on dates, taking risks, exploring relationships. And it's only through doing that that we grow and we learn. We only learn to relate through relating. There is no other way. You cannot learn from a book. You can't learn from a podcast or anything else. You've got to do it. And that takes a risk. And of course you don't spill your guts and tell them everything on the first date. But going and asking questions, seeking to draw the other person out, not just talking all the time, finding out about them, and you explore and you discover, and it may be it doesn't come to anything, but you've had a nice time together, hopefully. But then that is the way in which in dating, then you start to grow, you start to discover, and you may discover, oh my goodness, we've got something going here, and you've got another date and another date, and so on and so forth. I think taking those risks is a big part of what it takes and what sometimes people avoid.
And I think in a church context, I feel for many, many churches, and certainly our church and many in the UK, have sort of frozen in terms of relationships and dating. And it's like you're in this massive, great big goldfish bowl and everybody's watching and they're kind of saying...
Everyone's talking about
everybody's
it. Will they get married?
Oh, my goodness. So it's like everybody's like, I'm not doing that. And so actually what happens is people end up going looking for completely inappropriate relationships somewhere else, and that's no fun. So we as the church need to teach about relationships and how to date well. And we have, I mean, at HTB there's a dating course, which, and then we need to do lots more relationship teaching and helping and just freeing people up to take these risks and make friends, but with a very good understanding of some core values around it and how not to hurt people, how not to take, you know, use people and all of that stuff. So, there's things to learn.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. I love it. I love the idea of the taking risks thing because it's so true.
Yeah.
We try and find the person and put all this weight on this one person that you've got to be the one I'm going to spend the rest of my life with or whatever. But it just, it can often sabotage the process before it's even begun.
Yeah.
You guys have just stepped back from running Alpha Marriage at HTB. Mm-hmm. You're obviously still very much spokespeople for Alpha Marriage.
Yes.
But what's next in this next season? You know, let's say there is another 50 years in front of you.
Growing vegetables.
Growing vegetables.
This is, and marriage does go through seasons.
Yeah.
And for us, this is a very exciting new season for us. There are new opportunities. We get to spend more time together now than we have in the past. We handed over the marriage course and the other relationship courses at HGB to a wonderful younger couple. Actually, they are at the stage we were at when we started. And oh my goodness, it's so exciting seeing them taking on the courses. They love it. They're passionate about it. I think they'll do a better job than we ever did, actually.
Surely not.
Yeah. But and for us, it's like, it's wonderful the way God has led us into like a new open vista and an open door into other opportunities. And I mean, we are still, as you say,
ambassadors,
if you like, around the world for marriage course globally. And we are very, very happy to be doing that as long as anybody thinks it's useful. And particularly God, if he thinks it's useful for us to do that. But actually, more about, we feel quite passionate about supporting church leaders and their marriages. And we have a little space next to the home we live, which is a little cottage, and we're inviting couples to come there to just have a retreat, to just be there with their families for a few days, and no charge, because we have donors who are making that possible. And that's so lovely.
And then we have a chance just to get together with them, to chat with them, to pray with them. And that, we love that. We love doing that.
Wow. So I guess two questions to close up the podcast. The first one would be prayer. Mm. What role does prayer have in your marriage? And what would be your encouragement for the role of prayer in marriage at all?
Shall I say what we did when we first got married?
Go on.
Okay. So a great friend of ours, when we got married, he said to us, you must pray in your marriage every day.
Yeah.
It was a great piece of advice. He just didn't explain what he meant by that. And so Nikki and I set off.
We set about, it was having a Bible study of most of Ephesians and then pray. Went on for about an hour and a quarter.
You know, when we got back from work.
So the next night we thought, oh my God, we can't face that again. I mean, we're exhausted. So it was a sort of lurching from just occasionally spending a very long time. And then we came up with this idea that we would pray just for a few minutes each morning. And we'd simply ask each other the question, what can I pray for you today? And then just pray in response to that. And we did it before we had to leave the house to go to work. And so we had 10 minutes to do it. And that was amazing. It was a very powerful thing to do because, of course, if somebody's going to pray for you, you tell them what's most on your mind, what you're most worried about, anxious about. And sometimes it'd be the same thing day after day, but that was fine. And then just saying a short prayer for each other. Mm. And we've sought to do that. Each day, and that simple question, what can I pray for you today? And then praying, it builds, it actually helps to build intimacy as well as discovering God answers these prayers in wonderful ways.
Praying in that context of a little, but very personal, then spills over into kind of moments and ways of praying that actually there's a desire to pray rather than a disincentive to pray. Yeah. And obviously reading the Bible is an important part for us. And we do that individually, but when we come to pray together, we will always look at a verse.
Refer to something. Bible in 1 year.
Oh,
we
love it. Bible in 1 year.
Every morning.
Yeah, and that anchors us. And it's amazing how we realize when you read the Bible and then you pray and then you go about your day and then there's a need and then there's, you know, whatever it is, the Bible that you've read, God can use for that need, for that day, and it just comes naturally and it just turns into a prayer. And I think that's been something that has just grown and grown and grown and grown over the years so that we pray for pretty much anything at any time, but it's short, you know. I mean, I love going to prayer meetings when there's a very specific thing that we can pray and all the rest, but in a marriage, in a family, in day-to-day life, rather than it being intense, it's really doable, but it just becomes a part of what we do.
And, you know, hospitality is such a big part of marriage and a home, a Christian home, inviting people in, and this sense that Jesus is there in the home. We've asked him to come, to fill us, to fill our home, and so on. And we love hosting. Yeah. And we will always seek to pray before somebody comes, Lord, just be here, guide the conversation, fill this place, encourage that, whatever it is, something like that. So it's inviting Jesus into every space, every part, every place of our life.
Mm. You know, to finish off today, friends, it's been rich. I could talk with you for hours, but I recognize hours is an energy expense we don't all have. But there are people listening today who they're Christians and their marriage is on the brink. Mm. It's not doing too well. There'll be people listening today who are non-Christians in a much similar way. And you have such a heart for marriages. What would be a word of encouragement or a heart that you would have just to remind them in those moments as they're tuning in to finish off this podcast?
I would say to anyone who is struggling, don't give up. Things can change. They can change dramatically and radically. And we know so many couples now who, say, some years ago, they felt their marriage was on the brink, but they've done something, something like coming on the marriage course, something like going to talk to somebody. And things have changed around, turned around. Mm. They've started to open up communication again. And now they would say they're happier and stronger together than they've ever been. So we would say to couples, please don't give up.
Yeah, yeah, that's beautiful. I appreciate that. Scylla, I wonder, could I ask you to finish the podcast by praying for the marriages and relationships that people
I would really
today?
Love that.
Yeah, it'd be beautiful.
Lord, we thank you that you are the God of love. And you've made known to us your ways of love. And you've said, love is patient, love is kind, love keeps no record of wrongs, love protects, love never fails. And I want to pray for anybody listening to this podcast that they would reach out to you to guide them and to strengthen them and help them in their relationship, whether that's a marriage relationship, a parent-child relationship, a colleague, whatever, a friend, just for your love. And I ask that you would lead and guide them. You'd show them your ways of loving. Thank you for your grace in our lives that you want to give us your truths about love, your ways of loving. And so we ask that you would do this for us, for each one of us in our own unique situations. In Jesus' name, we pray.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you both so much.
Well, welcome back. It was great listening to Nikki and Scylla Lee, Jess. It was such a beautiful conversation and really genuinely beautiful people as well. It was a pleasure having them with us. What was something that really grabbed you from the conversation?
I just can't believe they've been married for so long and like just the way they interact.
Yeah.
Like you can just tell they just love each other so much. I mean, not all the time, but there is just that awe about them that they're constantly in awe of each other. And I just love that. A misconception that I have had, and I'm sure a lot of people have had, is that marriage can be this restraining thing, this sort of like bond that you have with each other, but it can be limiting. And the way they spoke about marriage is that it's a liberating thing. It's it's freedom. It's something beautiful to celebrate. And I want more of that. I want to like spread that more into society. And I love how they touched on, you know, at the moment, the way things are moving is that we are practicing marital habits outside of marriage, whether that's sex, living together, having kids together. So we've sort of like
criticizing
each other, disrespecting each other,
those
holding
two
grudges.
Things don't need to be in marriage, though. So,
yeah. Talking about from experience, or
yeah.
But so it was sort of like flip the tail, where you know God calls us to do all those things after marriage. What were your thoughts on that?
Oh, you know, I agree. I think we've also got to recognize that Christians can sometimes have a really big opinion about marriage in the world and not recognize that we haven't done a great job of portraying the biblical image of marriage in a way which is godly, in a way which is honoring, in a way which is attractive.
Yeah.
I think we often hold the world to standards that we struggle to live out ourselves.
Absolutely.
And so really redeeming marriage as a gift, as a blessing,
yeah,
is also something to work on.
Yeah.
And also realizing that marriage also isn't the goal. Jesus is the goal. You're finding someone to help you in that pursuit of becoming like
Jesus.
I love that. It's not necessarily the win. I mean, anyone that's been married will know you get married and a lot of the pre-held conceptions get dashed pretty fast.
Yeah, wow.
Marriage is a vessel that God uses to shape you.
Yeah.
Not just delight you, but it does delight you. And I have a great marriage with my wife.
How long
Sarah.
Have you been married to Sarah for?
12 years now.
Wow.
12 years this coming December. December 2024 will be 12 years married.
Wow. And what are the things that you guys do in your marriage to sort of keep that love and keep that, like, gaze on Jesus as you guys grow together? Chocolate. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. No, you know what it is? I think I respect couples a lot that have this systemic approach to how they do things. And I really agree with that. We've got a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 6-month-old.
Crazy.
And a dog who isn't got the best of health. Mm. And so, like, our world's pretty wild.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I'd say has been central to our marriage, particularly around our faith, is communication.
Mm.
We talk about how we are going with God and how we're going with each other.
So
how's
good.
Our prayer life together going? How's it going with our kids? How's it going with, how's our discipleship, our walk?
Yeah.
Being employed by the church, we've got a really differentiate between my witness as a pastor and the intimate relationship we share together, the intimate relationship we both share with God.
Yeah.
So really making sure there are conversations and things that only Sarah and I really talk about together.
Mm.
Not intimacy physically, but intimacy emotionally and spiritually has been really important for us. And
And
I think, you know, we've done Alpha Marriage. My encouragement would be, if you've never done Alpha Marriage and you're married or you think about getting married, the Alpha courses are phenomenal preparation.
So good.
Plug into those, step in there. In fact, if you've not done Alpha and you are asking questions about Jesus, maybe the first step for you is to jump onto alpha.org.au, find an Alpha course running near you that you might learn what it means to become more like Jesus. So friends, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast today. Jess, if people want to get involved or engage with the podcast, how might they do that?
Make sure to subscribe and like our videos on YouTube. We're on Spotify and iTunes as well, friends. Or otherwise, click on to church.nu/podcast, and that's where you see all our updates.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, friends, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you again next time for another great conversation about what it means to become more like Jesus. See you then.
Thanks for listening. We hope we passed on some valuable knowledge on how you can become and lead a life more like Jesus. If this message inspired you, please make sure to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss a single podcast, or share it with a friend. And for more information and resources on what we discussed today, please visit church.nu/becoming. See you next time, and God bless.